cue your intro.
<laughs> 2019, it's gonna be a good year for VR.
Okay, well, I mean, it's good that we've got the rest of the year to work on that.
I felt inspired by the 50s jazz just because we were talking about old computers.
I mean, that's interesting, so. Because from the sound of it, that sounded nothing like 50s jazz. So it makes me wonder if you've ever heard it.
First, the shame about my step count, and now the shame about my lack of general knowledge about the music industry. All right. Anyway, how are you, Dan? How are you dealing with the cold English weather?
I mean, I'm not. I wear a lot of layers.
Now. Michelle of a man.
I've gone from, like, you know, wearing t-shirts and shorts and flip flops all day every day to now, I don't know, long johns. And like jogging bottoms underneath, and two pairs of jeans over those, 50 t-shirts,
hand warmers at the ready.
Yeah, 7 jumpers, and 4 pairs of gloves on each hand.
Bless you.
It's been a struggle. Yeah. But not for much longer though, fortunately. So
yeah, I was going to say. To be fair though, for you. You know, there is an end date in sight for this. For me, mm-hmm. It's like, well, I don't know. We had snow in April last year, didn't we? So, yeah. I mean, I'm buckled in.
This is it. You've got a good 2 weeks of summer to look forward to later on this year. So,
fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Have you been doing anything VR related over your break? How's it all kicking off for you?
Nothing of the year. Massively. If anything, I've just been kind of, I don't know, relaxing a little bit. I think the shoot just before Christmas kind of took it out of me a bit, even though it's like just 3 weeks.
Oh, tell people about that, because I'm not sure you've talked about this on the podcast.
No, I haven't. Back in November, I think. Yeah, November. I was flown out to Indonesia, which is very nice.
As one does. Don't worry, guys. We're going to be getting into the details about how you live such a privileged life as a VR creator. We will get into that. Stick with us. Continue.
So I was flown out to Indonesia to direct a series of 360 promotional videos for the tourism board. And what ensued was 3 weeks of relentless shooting. Long days, lots of travel, but yeah, it was good.
Of almost drowning, if I remember correctly.
There was a lot of near-death experiences, whether it was like almost drowning to falling off a road that had been damaged by a landslide.
Being laughed at for being a bold man.
Yeah. Became a bit of a celebrity because bald white fellas are not the norm in certain parts of Indonesia. So had to take a lot of selfies with the locals. So that was interesting.
It was weird.
At first I thought it was just because I was a Westerner, but then I saw other Westerners and I was like, that can't be it. Maybe they think I'm like Jason Statham or something.
Who's Jason Statham?
Really?
Yeah. First lawnmower man. And now Jason, can I Google it? I'm going to Google it. I'll probably know the face. Okay, here we go. Oh my God. I literally put Jason and it was the second.
I can't believe this is serious. I thought you was just winding
up. Oh yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah.
I would know him by name though.
Nobody came up and said that they loved me in the Meg or like the Fast and the Furious franchise. So I was like, maybe that's not it. But yeah, it just turns out because I was like bald and white. And that's a pretty big thing out there apparently.
There we go.
I got eaten alive by leeches. I've got a scar.
Have you got a scar? scar?
I've got a scar now on the back of my leg where I was swimming in the sea trying to get some shots and that, and the current was quite strong and it threw me into some coral.
Oh no,
so I
that
cut all
poor
my leg.
coral. Have
cut
you
all my
not
leg
heard that coral is... joking.
Well,
I'm
I was
not
worried that,
joking, it's a
like,
very serious
I
issue,
may have got
but...
infected and might have had to have, like, a leg off. But it's all fine. It's healed up for the most part. But yeah,
Good,
it's a
I'm
nice
glad.
little...
Are you allowed to talk about what the series of videos was for?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just like a series of promotional videos for the tourism board. So it was like, but we was going to...
Come to Indonesia. Look how
yeah.
amazing it is.
Yeah,
literally, put on a headset and be here.
But
ignore
it was cool.
The
it was
dying
like,
man in the corner.
yeah.
That's me.
But it was like 3 weeks. So like each week we was on, we was in a different part of the country. And then each one we had like different actors as well. Which made
okay,
it
question for you, which
it.
Ties into our big topic for today.
Mm-hmm.
How did this project come about? How did you get this job? Because it sounds like most people listening to this will be like, mm-hmm. I mean, minus all the near-death experiences, although mm-hmm. I don't know, there could be some interesting people listening to us. But it sounds like a dream job, you know, being flown out, you know, being Mr. Director, kind of coming in and directing a series of videos where you got to travel and do what you love professionally. Mm-hmm. So how did it come about?
Right. Well, I don't know about professionally. I mean, we may not go that far. I mean, I don't
depends
know.
Depends on
I,
your definition of professional.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, I mean, I don't, yeah, I don't know if I do professional and stuff. It was kind of like pretty loose and like hard. But the thing is with stuff like that, I mean, yeah, it's absolutely a dream job. And, you know, I was completely, you know, grateful to even, you know, be in with a shout of getting that job. But yeah, it was weird because I was in Penang in Malaysia at the time, and I was just doing like some sort of like freelance video editing and stuff like that to sort of get me by. And I checked my emails one day, and I had this email from this, you know, random dude that just said something like Indonesia 360 in the subject line. So I was like, what's this?
Yeah, this sounds interesting.
Yeah. And yeah, basically this guy from a production company in Jakarta had found me on Instagram. And yeah, they had a deal in place with Wonderful Indonesia, who's like the Ministry of Tourism there, to do a series of 360 videos that they were going to release on YouTube and show at like tourism conferences and things like that. But they weren't particularly sort of clued up on 360 video and how it works and things like that. So they were looking online to sort of try and find people that were slightly more knowledgeable on it. And they came across me. From the sounds of it, there was a few people that were approached because they wanted me to like edit together like another little, I mean, I hesitate to call it like a sizzle reel.
Like a bit
stuff
of a show reel kind
away.
Of thing.
But yeah, kind of. Apparently that's kind of what sort of sealed the deal for me, because then I sent something over to them and then they sent it on to the tourism board and they were like, yeah, let's go with this dude.
Let's have some of this.
Yeah. So I got the call because they'd reached out to me a few weeks before the shoot was about to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was, I mean, I didn't find out that I had the job until I got a call on the Wednesday afternoon, and then I was flown out to Jakarta on the Saturday night.
See, this is the thing that I want people to take away from this story. The biggest part, I mean, there's lots of gems in there that we can dissect, but this is what I find as well, is when you're in the luxury position of people coming to you for work, projects in general, like one-off projects, I don't know why in 360, but they tend to be a little bit of like, not an afterthought, but they definitely seem to kind of, once they're on and you're away, and it's literally happening within like the next kind of, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. There is not a massive lead time on this project. I did a project before Christmas, which was a big kind of commercial project for a big investment bank. And it was one of those things where I was kind of like, okay, great. And I explained to them, these are all the things that need to be in place before we can even think about starting to put together, you know, a production schedule. Literally, it was a case of, it was greenlit on the Thursday, and I was in London doing the storyboard and scripting with them, at the whole team, on like the kind of the Wednesday or the Monday. Oh, no, it was like a crazy short period of time. And I don't think people, especially people that work by themselves, realize that it can get quite high pressure quite quickly. And yeah, that's something to be really prepared for, especially if you're doing like lots of active marketing, and if you are reaching out to lots of people. Obviously it's a very, very beautiful situation to be in, to have all of a sudden, you know, multiple projects, or even just one big project, you know, come on your plate. But I always think, now I always have like a kind of system in place that I know, okay, if this goes, then these are the dominoes that need to be in place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To I mean, it's a little bit different when you're kind of being, because in that project, you were being kind of parachuted in as the kind of 360 expert and the director of that shoot. So actually, a lot of the kind of considerations around it were being taken care of by the production company, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Whereas the way I operate, because obviously I run like a production studio, so it's kind of like, you know, all of that logistical stuff that then falls on my head, and I have to bring in a team then to kind of like execute on that. So it's worth people thinking about that, especially if you're kind of a, you know, a solopreneur and you're doing everything yourself, which is, you know, by far the best way to start out. But yeah, thinking through what that process looks like as soon as you get that kind of like, as soon as you've hooked them in, because I think so many people are so, I used to be like this, don't know whether you were the same, getting a job, like, you know, getting like a kind of a paid freelance gig when you first start out is the most exciting thing. And all of a sudden it's like, oh God, where do I start?
And that's the thing, like, because this is like by far like the biggest project I've ever worked on, like, you know, just in the whole time that I've been working for myself, like, I haven't worked on anything this big. And I think as well, the excitement got the better of me, because it was something I'd always like wanted to do, is I've wanted to like have like a get of projects and stuff where I was getting paid to, like, to travel. That's something that's always been on like my list. So I think when the initial offer came in, I was like, I was so blinded with excitement over the whole thing that I didn't really do any research like into the company or anything like that. So when I actually got to Jakarta, and then I got like a text saying, oh, like this person's going to come pick you up from the airport, and then this guy come pick me up and he's like, oh, we've got to go meet the driver. And I was thinking, how many people have come to collect me? And then this guy pulls up in this van with blacked out windows, and I was like, hang on a minute. It's like, am I being human trafficked? And then I literally spent like the 40-minute journey. I spent the 40-minute journey to the hotel just like literally just terrified, because I thought, I haven't done any research on this company before coming out here. I just got so excited about the prospects.
I may well be
trip.
Walking into a sex slavery situation here.
and I was like, I was terrified, and I was like texting people when I was in the
car. Oh no! Going, like the moment when a plane goes down.
Like, look, if you don't hear from me in a few hours' time, you know, it might be worth reaching out to the embassy or something.
Okay, so rule number one, people.
So yeah, do your homework first.
Yeah, do your homework on something. But
like
that is very funny. And also, though, I think it demonstrates, and I'm always having to say this to my parents. Well, more my mum. My mum is more the worrier out of the two of them. My dad's more like, yeah, do it. Yeah, go. Do everything. Explore the world. Whereas my mum's a little bit more like, oh, I just want you to be safe. And the thing is, most of the time, like 99% of the time that I've travelled or like worked for travel, anything like that, like you get into those situations and you do think this is really, really dodgy. But nine times out of 10, it's fine.
And fortunately, this was one of those times.
Yeah, exactly. You're fine. Probably more than 9 out of 10 times. That seems a little unfair. but yeah. So let me try and think. There was a couple of points that I wanted to pick out of that. Okay, right. So in terms of our subject today being how to get work in 360, how to get paid 360 work, I think what's interesting about that project is that they reached out to you based on your social media. So they must have, you know, kind of realized that they had this need for a 360 expert. They've gone online, they've seen, they must have, did they know that you were at that moment in time based in Asia, or did they still think you were based in London?
No, they thought I was in England.
Okay, that's interesting.
And this is the point. And I didn't realize this until while I was out there and sort of like chatting, because that in those sort of 3 weeks, sort of, you know, you're with these people, like, you know, all day, all night, so you become like a sort of, I don't know, like a little sort of close-knit family. So yeah, so I was learning a bit more about like how they operate, and I didn't realize until later on that they had like multiple projects going on like around the country. But what they do is they tend to hire people from like off Instagram, people that have followings, which is weird, because it's like, I don't know why I'm here then.
You've got a big following. You've got like 8K followers or something, haven't you?
Yeah, but I think a lot of them aren't actually real. Because you look at the engagement I get on my posts, it's like barely anything.
So has someone, as a joke, bought you fake followers, do you think?
Possibly. But but the thing is, part of that was built up when I was just like doing sort of general corporate videos and stuff before I moved to like 360.
Posting 360, yeah, they were like, I'm out.
I'm not interested in this, mate. Shut, you're boring me now.
Unfollow. That's interesting.
So part of it was to do that, because I noticed they were working with a lot of like really, you know, big influencers that have like big followings on Instagram and YouTube and stuff like that. So I don't know if that maybe played a part in it, like that I had.
Well, I think probably
Instagram. I think in that, you know, sector.
This is the thing. So let's briefly go down a very boring but very useful corporate rabbit hole.
Let's do it.
Stick with me here. Okay. Strapping
in.
Start snoring. okay. So I'm going to briefly talk through the sales funnel. Do you know sales funnel psychology, Dan?
No, I hold my hand up. I am the worst salesperson.
Oh, well, I'm ever. About to school you, because I am the best salesperson that I know. So.
this is why I have a notepad next to me.
There we go. Everyone, are you ready? You've been warned. Get your pen out. Okay, so here we go. Everything in life doesn't matter, really. I mean, obviously, this is talking specifically about selling a product or a service, but everything really in life kind of follows this same pattern in terms of this kind of sales psychology. So whether that be like, I don't know, for example, trying to get a friend to go to the cinema, or, you know, if you're trying to motivate someone to do something, or if you're trying to find someone for your product or service, basically it all comes down to this kind of sales funnel psychology. Now, I've learned this kind of like over the last 5 years from various businesses that I've worked in and for. So this might not be, you know, to the T exactly kind of what the original, I don't know, essay or whatever it was, or the original kind of study on it. But here's the general gist. So at the top of your sales funnel, you have awareness, aka, it's difficult to kind of explain. Let me, okay, this is my analogy that I use all the time, okay. An ice cream truck, okay?
Okay.
So an ice cream truck has like, is like the kind of perfect analogy for a sales funnel. So I'm sitting at home, I'm not thinking about ice cream. I mean, that's a lie. I'm always thinking about ice cream. Okay, but for this example, I'm not thinking about ice cream. I'm just getting on with my life. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I hear the iconic ice cream truck music. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, even if I didn't know what that was, it would pique my interest, right? It's kind of got my attention. Like, what's that music playing? That's interesting. That's awareness. So that is kind of like, people in it, I'm going to tie everything back to 360. So mm-hmm. that is people that don't know anything about 360, don't know that they need it in their lives, don't know why, you know, it's just never entered their sphere. You know, why on earth would they kind of like need it, right? So first things first is awareness. So that in this example, the ice cream truck music would be the equivalent of, let's say, a blog post that someone stumbles across that says, you know, something like I put out something on LinkedIn that was like four ways that VR can enhance your internal training. Okay, so it's things like, okay, you know, it's kind of putting it into their radar. So all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, I don't know what that is, but I've kind of, it's caught my attention and now I'm going to explore it a little bit. The next stage of the funnel, if we're talking about the ice cream analogy, mm-hmm. is the awareness phase, right? So it's kind of like, oh, sorry, not the awareness, the converting phase. So you've got the awareness, you've got someone's attention. Now it's all about, are you going, like, how are you going to convert them? And this is the bit that people get kind of, this is the messy bit, because this is the actual bit where you either do or don't make a sale. Because ultimately, if no one knows you exist or no one knows your product or service exists, then how could they possibly buy from you? Okay, so that first awareness phase, that is the equivalent of like putting out content or, you know, like making cold emails or, you know, just all that kind of stuff where you're kind of like talking about 360 or kind of making someone aware of 360. The next bit, converting. So the ice cream truck rolls on up and there's a few kind of decisions now that I have to make. So now I can see the ice cream truck. So now I have to decide, am I in the mood for ice cream? Do I want an ice cream? Hmm. Yeah, actually, I kind of like feel like it's a good idea to eat ice cream at the beginning of February 2019 because I'm freezing cold and maybe I'm going to just indulge and just slip straight into that ice cold creaminess. Don't know where I'm going with that. Anyway, so once I've decided that I want that ice cream, I'm going to go up to the truck. Does this truck look like the kind of truck that I want to buy ice cream from? You know, what's its design like? You know, is it really old and tattered and makes me think, oh, I don't think I want to buy an ice cream from that truck because it looks a little bit unsanitary. But let's say it's not. Let's say I've decided I want ice cream. I've gone to the truck. The truck looks brilliant. You know, it's caked in cool graphics. And it's got the price list there, and I can see all the different types of ice creams that they've got. Okay, so that's kind of like the first stage of the converting, because now I've decided that I want ice cream. I've decided that I'm happy with the look of this truck, so I'm going to explore now kind of like what I want and how much it costs, okay? So obviously tying that whole section back to 360, someone goes, oh, 360 sounds like a really good option for making, like, for example, the travel tourism. 360 is a really innovative way to market Indonesia. So cool, yeah, okay, we're happy with this idea of going with 360, but now do I want to go with this production studio in Jakarta, and do I want to go with this 360 director who's based in London but actually isn't based in London, he's actually just down the road in old Thailand. And so at that stage it's kind of like that's when they're looking at things like your credentials, your portfolio. They're looking like, why is it that I should buy from you, Dan. Like, it's because you put together that really good showreel. And so you've proven that you've done this before. I've like seen that you've got, you know, 8K followers on social media. So you must be trustworthy. Like, you've got a bit of an audience. I can see your Instagram portfolio. So that looks really slick. You look like a professional. You don't look like an amateur. I'm happy with my selection to go with you for my 360. And then it comes down to like the bottom part of the kind of sales funnel, which is actually, I can't actually remember what that bottom bit is called, because it's like it varies, because sometimes it's just all about retention and sometimes it's kind of, yeah. Anyway, regardless, let's say, you know, that final bottom bit of the funnel, if you imagine it literally like a funnel, it's coming down to those very few people that you've got all the way through that sales funnel. And at the bottom, back to the ice cream analogy, what ice cream do I want? Is it the right price? So I've gone to the ice cream truck. I've heard the ice cream truck. Yes, I want ice cream. I've gone to the ice cream truck. Yes, I like the look of this ice cream truck. Now I'm looking at the products. Oh, £5 for a choc ice. Are you having a laugh? Or it's like, actually, I'm really in the mood for a 99er flake. Actually, yeah, that they're selling it for £1.99 because everyone knows that a 99p flake is not actually 99p these days, inflation. And so with that decision, okay, I really want that product and it's the right price for me because I know that the benefit of that is going to be, it's hard to kind of use the ice cream analogy here because obviously the ice cream, other than satisfaction, doesn't really add anything to my life. But in terms of enjoyment, it's a win. So it's the right product, it's the right price. And so now I'm going to buy. And so again, drawing that back to 360, you know, they've decided they're going to use 360 to promote Indonesia tourism. They've decided that that production studio and you personally are the right people to go with because you've proven, you know, XYZ. Now it's got to be, what is the value of this 360 going to provide? And is the price you're charging for that product going to provide a return on investment? And this is the easiest way to sell 360 at the moment. And it's not easy, don't get me wrong. I realize that is a bit of a, you know, a double-edged kind of phrase to use. But in terms of where the easy wins are going to be, it's all going to be about that return on investment. So, for example, with the travel tourism, the tourism video, sorry, how is that going to be? Because it's probably going to be a little bit more expensive to produce 360 than traditional video. What is the benefit of that? Well, it might come in the benefit. It might be worth the extra money in the budget purely because the quality is going to be better and it's going to be more innovative and engaging and something different that sets them apart from their competitors. It might be that, you know, something more kind of practical and statistical. 360 online on Facebook and YouTube, you know, there's stats, I can't remember the exact stats, but you know, there's proof and research gone into the fact that a 360 video or photo is something like 5 times more engaging, as in, you know, someone's going to spend longer on a piece of 360 media than they are traditional. So, you know, again, it's a way of like, for them, getting more awareness, getting more converted sales, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then it just becomes this kind of feedback loop because you just kind of keep doing that. And then ideally, obviously, you go through that funnel once with a client and you do such a good job and you kind of, you know, you prove that you were the right choice and you prove that the product was the right choice. And yeah, they're really happy with the fact that they, you know, have now this suite of 360 films and it's proving really successful for them. And so then they come back to you and then you don't need to do all the legwork of the top of the funnel stuff because you've already got them in your funnel and they're already at the bottom of the funnel. And it literally will always come down to, you know, price and quality at the end of the day. That's kind of that bottom part. So anyway, that was a really long-winded kind of example, but that is essentially what I have learned about sales in 5 years in about 10 minutes.
I like the ice cream van analogy though.
Did you?
I wasn't expecting that. But I like it.
Did it paint a picture for you?
Well, it's also made me crave some ice cream now as well, so thanks. Thanks for
Same.
that.
Do you know what? Same. But luckily, I bought some Halo Top yesterday, so it's
Yeah,
all
I've got
good.
nothing, so I'm gonna have to go Tesco's in a bit.
So yeah,
But yeah, that
so
makes total
obviously
sense though.
that is very like obviously that is very high level, but when you kind of then break that down, so the great thing about social media and the great thing about what happened in your scenario is the fact that you skipped that first stage because there was already a production company that was already working on that top stage. So actually, being in that kind of that middle part of the funnel, which is where we both are now, because this is the same way that I get work as well, generally speaking, although I do put out a lot of content, well, I try to, to kind of get people interested. Generally speaking, people come to me and people come to you when they already know that they want something 360. So actually, your job at that point is literally, well, not literally. It's kind of, the two things that you're doing there is number one, kind of, convincing them that you are the right person for the job, and B that you B or two, I can't remember what system I was using there. That last bit is just to kind of to be kind of the right price, the right quality, the right product for the right fit, and that is essentially what it comes down to. And actually, the more kudos you, the more kind of, profile you build, the more credentials you get, the
Oh
less
no.
legwork you have to do, actually. So, again, maybe we can dive into a little bit about how you went about that, because you're in that position now and I'm in that position now. And I think obviously a lot of people listening to this won't be, they'll still be at the point where they have to reach out. And we'll talk about that in a minute. About some tips about how to go about getting work if you are in that stage where you're still building your portfolio and you might not necessarily have loads of following or anything like that, which by the way won't always come down to how many followers you've got. That's kind of a little bit irrelevant in some cases, but it's things like do if I go on your profile, am I going to see you smoking a spliff and drinking a beer? If so, you know what I mean? It's kind of it's looking at what you're putting out to the world, and do you know? Anyway, back to you because I've talked a lot. So yeah, talk about your journey to getting to that point.
Well, it's funny because this is literally like my first sort of paid client gig,
Really?
which is quite crazy to
Your
think.
first 360 paid client gig, yeah. Wow, amazing. Well, congratulations for it to be the
So
biggest project that you've ever done.
that's pretty insane, isn't
That's
it? Really.
amazing.
So
Congratulations.
it baffles me. But like prior to that, like I was literally just going out and sort of shooting my own 360 stuff. So I was like sort of doing a bit of everything, just like stuff that I'd shot and then just putting it together in, little videos here and there. I reached out to a professional basketball team in London before I went away, and so said like, do you mind if I come down one to one of your games and shoot some 360 video, and then after it's finished, you can have it and you can use it, however you like.
Love that.
And they were like, yeah, no worries. Well, let us know what game you want to come to. So I had my pick of the games. Let us know what
Oh.
game you want to come to. We'll sort you out a
You were
press
like
pass.
probably the one where you
So sort of,
win.
So now it's like sort of doing bits and pieces of that and just reaching out to people and just saying like, if you let me come down to this, then you can have it and do whatever you want with it afterwards. So it's not costing you anything. It's only costing me time and obviously travel fare, but that's all right in the long run. But yeah, I do think the main reason was just like the social media thing, and just pushing that. I think.
And so when did you start building your social media profile? And how do you kind of
Oh, that's
still do it?
I've been doing that for years, and like I for me that's like a whole other full-time job as well. Like
Oh, yeah.
I'm not like overly like regular with the posts. I was while I was like away, Now I don't feel there's like there's nothing as interesting to post now, like being here in Essex.
Ah, preach. That is
It's a
literally my
bit,
life. Like, I've
yeah,
literally had to
it's.
change my Instagram to be tips because I was like, I don't go out of the house enough to take pretty photos.
Yeah, it's weird, and I think like especially now, like now that I want to concentrate on doing like more travel 360 stuff, now I've sort of dipped my foot into that pool, and seeing what that's like. That's something I want to sort of work on more this year. So like I'm not at a point yet where people are like sort of coming to me like all the time. I mean, fortunately, if this if this video or this set of videos does well, then there's a likeliness that I could go back there later on this year and do some more in some other parts of the
And
country.
that's the thing, actually, to highlight to people, because when people, I get a lot of people reach out to me on Instagram that say, I want to start a 360 production company, but have never actually done a paid 360 job themselves as a freelancer yet. And I would say that you would be so surprised at how few clients you really need to sustain yourself as a freelancer. If if you are good and if you get kind of, if you go after clients that could be repeat business, like for example, the Indonesian Tourist Board might not necessarily, oh, they might do, but they might not necessarily need a new suite of films for a long time. But the production company, they now, will potentially keep you in mind for any 360 job that they then pitch. And so that is a really valuable lesson to learn is, when you're looking, look for the low hanging fruit. It doesn't necessarily have to be that you go after, these big corporate giants that you probably will require to be kind of a production studio. Like I was freelance for in 360, I was doing 360 and kind of traditional video for 2 years freelance before I made the jump to do 360 full time. And at that point, I'd done enough 360 projects by myself, as in, shot it myself, directed it, edited it, all of that kind of stuff, stitched it, everything. I'd done enough of that to then know that I could then scale so that I could go after bigger clients and I wouldn't be able to do them by myself. I'd need a team, but that's not where you should start. You should start with trying to get a few, cherry pick a few kind of clients that can generate enough income just to sustain yourself. I think that's the thing. The conversation around working for yourself has this weird attachment to, making a shit ton of cash. It doesn't have to be that, actually. Actually, if you could make as much money as you do, from your normal 9 to 5 boring job that you don't like, that's why you do 360 on the side. If you could make just that, enough money to get by, then that should be the goal. It shouldn't be, and actually, arguably, even less. Like if you know what I mean? If you could work 3 days a week doing something you love and get paid a little bit less than what you get paid at your boring corporate job, but you've got all this free time and you're doing something you love, like that's the trade-off. You know what I mean? Like there is not, there's not as I get very stressed because I get very busy, but at the same time, every single day, I remind myself how grateful I am that I haven't had to work, a 9 to 5 job in years. Years.
Absolutely. I forgot to mention as well. I just remembered as well. One of the when I first got a 360 camera, one of like an ongoing client I had when I was just doing like general corporate videos and stuff like that reached out, and they're based in Spain,
Oh,
and
wow.
they reached out and they'd started a new company selling like real estate over there. So I told them, I said like, this would be quite useful for, potentially sort of selling your houses and stuff. So they flew me out there because they wanted to update their corporate video anyway, but I threw that into like the deal as well to do like a couple of 360 tours for a couple of the properties that they were they were selling.
That's a brilliant way of doing it, kind of adding it onto a traditional video service.
To sort of, so I had that portfolio, because obviously property would be, you know, a big industry to sort of go for.
Mm.
For 360 stuff, and that was one I was like looking at getting into, because it just kind of made sense, and you know, there's money in there. But I don't know, it depends on what you sort of want to get out of it, really. I think the way you sort of go about it depends on, you know, the sort of work that you're going after. Like for me to do more travel stuff, it does make sense for me to sort of, you know, build up on social media and things like that. Whereas if you're going to do like corporate or property and stuff, you don't really need to go down.
I would argue you still do, but it's just slightly different. It's like the way that you position your content, you know, on Instagram is very much you know, if you're going after a travel market, then your Instagram should not be, like, I don't know, random virtual tour photos, you know, whereas, because your Instagram is very much around the fact it's you, and it's very much around the fact that you are traveling, and it's kind of like, it's very artistic, and it's very aimed at that kind of market.
I thought about that.
No, it looks fab, it's great, it's a beautiful Instagram feed. Whereas if you're
hang on, what's going on?
You're like, this is suspicious. No, it's great. I love this. This is my thing with Instagram, is I actually really love when a feed looks really nice, which is it. That is what prohibits me from posting more, because I will only post something if it kind of aligns with the kind of photo that I post now. And that's actually a real, it's a bad habit. I really need to just post more content, because you know, it doesn't really matter whether it looks good. What I'm doing is actually giving out tips and valuable advice, it doesn't really need to look good. But anyway, coming back to the corporate thing though, you know, it just changes slightly how you kind of position yourself. And yeah, you don't need 100k followers on Instagram to go after the corporate market, but what you might want to do is you might want to have a LinkedIn page that you post like content around. But again, you know, obviously that, like you said, that is a full-time job in itself. But what's interesting, what I want to pick up on and really emphasize to people, which you mentioned, and it's a very taboo subject, but the majority of the way that you will build your profile quicker is if you do portfolio-worthy stuff for free. If you wait to get paid for that first 360 job you do, well, you're kind of... If we come back to that funnel, that crucial middle bit, you might have convinced someone that they need 360, but that middle bit is going to be so much harder. Like, why should they trust and pay you money when you have no proof of the quality and, you know, the kind of, what's the word, the reputation of someone that has done this and achieved results for someone else? Now, I'm not saying it's not possible. And it especially was possible back when 360 was really kind of so new that actually no one, like one of the first 360 gigs I got, I openly said that I'd never done 360 before. And it was, you know, it was like a part of like an agency job. So, you know, I was speaking directly with a creative agency, but no one really knew how to do it. So we were all kind of in the same boat, whereas that's not the case now. There are some, you know, big companies doing it. There's a lot of people that have got very great portfolios. How can you, you know, skip a few, how can you like skip up the ladder a bit quicker by doing things that align with what you actually want to be doing? So in your example, obviously you want to be doing more kind of adventure-y, travel-y stuff. So you just shot stuff for yourself, and you don't have to necessarily go to a company and say, can I shoot something for you for free? Not necessarily, but what I would suggest is, going out there and shooting content around the kind of subject or around the kind of product that you want to offer. So so that when someone does come to you and say, can I see your showreel? Like, then obviously you have one. And you know, when I think back on my 360 career, although I was very fortunate because I already had a kind of a good reputation as a producer in the agency world. So to make that jump over to 360 was a little bit less difficult because I already had good relationships and, you know, so I kind of was paid to learn on the job. But actually, I would argue that I would not be where I am today. I would not be doing the 360 projects that I'm very fortunate to be able to do today if it wasn't for Kida Like, which is my first thing that, you know, my first kind of creative, I would argue, kind of like venture into 360, something where, you know, myself along with Chloe, who kind of directed it on the day, we worked collaboratively to really creatively flesh out this idea from start to finish. I put, you know, X amount of thousands of my own money into that project, you know, so it wasn't even free. It cost me money.
Oh, yeah.
But it was so new and different, and because no one was really at that time doing 360 drama, it was so kind of noteworthy, and obviously because of the kind of talent we got attached, which again was a pure fluke, but even you remove the talent from it and you just have any kind of actors involved, it was so different and so new that actually the opportunities that I got off the back of it paid for the whole production within like a few months. You know, I was getting asked to speak at like conferences and film festivals and, you know, being asked to be on panels and being asked to like consult people and tell them how to do it. But all of a sudden you become a voice of authority. And that's what doing kind of work, I won't say free, but like portfolio building work, that's what it can do for you. And actually, both of our journeys kind of prove that if you put in that initial legwork, like, don't get me wrong, I was super poor for like the first couple of years that I like, well, the first couple of years that I was kind of doing more 360 than traditional video work. I wasn't poor. That's a lie. You know, you know what I mean? I wasn't getting paid mass amounts of money to do these things. And then all the money that I got, I was really stupid. And I just kept reinvesting in equipment, which looking back was not the right thing to do. Like I bought like four different 360 camera rigs. You know, I bought a like new laptop. I bought all these stuff because I thought that, oh, you know, these are the things that I need. When actually, if I could go back, I would take that, you know, oh God, I dread to think, probably about 10 grand and reinvest it in more projects like Kida Like, because those bigger projects, they're the ones that are going to get you the attention. So people come to you, so you don't have to go after people.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I always found like, even before I even like switched to 360 and stuff, like a lot of the work I got was from people that had like seen stuff that I'd, you know, done off my own back that wasn't paid for, like my own personal projects that I was working on out of interest and stuff, and people would get in touch and go, oh, I saw this online, I really liked it, blah, blah, blah. Can you want to come and do some stuff for us?
Well, that's it. I've seen people, I like know, because I used to work in the kind of the agency, the digital kind of marketing world, like I know a lot of people that, you know, animators or video editors or all these kind of things, where like half their showreel is made up companies, like as in they've physically made up logos to make it look, and they've like but they're extremely talented, so no one really, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit here and say it doesn't help to have like the big shiny logos that people recognize attached to your work. But even here's a tip for you. You know, a lot of the kind of brands that I've worked with has been through an agency. So technically, my client is not, for example, RB, which is a huge, like monstrous, I don't even know how they would define themselves, but they own like a lot of brands. Like the one that always comes to my mind is Jurex, because I am a child. But yeah, basically, you know, the labs where they make the condoms and the lube.
Yeah.
But they own, you know, in fact, I'm just going to quickly look them up.
Could have just stopped on condoms, really.
They're a bit like a Procter & Gamble in that they own lots of like brands that you would know the name of. Okay, so like Dettol, Clearasil, Nurofen, Strepsils, Airwick, you know, they own all of these, Vanish, Finish. They own a lot of kind of like product household names that you would know. But that job that I did for them, where we literally, it was so cool, we literally were in the lab where they created the condoms and the lube. But that job was not actually, I wasn't directly working with RB, I was working with a digital agency that was working on a bigger project where 360 was a very small part of a bigger piece of the puzzle. So that would be another thing that I would recommend, is if you want those kind of like shiny badges, those names that you can say that you've worked with, you as a kind of one, you know, person company are not necessarily to begin with going to be able to have access to those. So go after digital agencies. Know that you're going to be royally rogered on price, and it's going to be an extremely painful process, because agencies are in general a nightmare to work with. But you know, in terms of portfolio building, again, could be something to think about.
Without doubt, definitely.
Is there any final thoughts? Because I realise I could literally speak on the subject for hours. And listeners, please do reach out and tell us whether any of this is of interest, because it's a new year. We want to do more of these episodes. We want to do stuff that's actually interesting to you. So, yeah, steer us in the right direction.
And also reach out if you have any questions.
Absolutely. Well.
If there's like, I don't know, there's something that you want to get into, like a specific market or something.
Yeah.
And then want some pointers on how to get into that. Yeah.
Fuck it. Let's make this a coaching call podcast all of a sudden.
Oh.
People.
Oh, we could do that, actually. We could.
People, send in your questions. Send in your... Maybe I'll ask... Because I get quite a few people reach out with those kind of questions on Instagram anyway. Yeah. About like specific... Maybe I'll ask. Go back to them and ask, do you mind me reading out the podcast? And maybe we can, because I feel like maybe that's useful. I want this podcast, much as it's so fun to just literally shoot the shit and talk 360 and VR. And don't get me wrong, there'll be a
lube.
Exactly. Get on to what was the first episode was like bullfrogs having sex in 360, and now we're on working with lube and condoms.
It escalated quickly.
Yeah, but you know, but I do, and as much as there will be those, you know, episodes where we just have to simply rant or review, like, you know, the latest gear, I want it to be as valuable as possible, and I'm sure you do. So yeah, please do reach out and let us know.
Yes, cool. Well, on that note, I guess we should wrap it up. You can. Where can people find you online?
I am at Alex Makes VR across all platforms: Facebook, Instagram. They're my kind of two main hangouts. LinkedIn, if you really want to go down the corporate route. add me Twitter as well.
Cool, and you can follow myself at Daniel K Hatton on everything. Everything social media related.
Beautiful.
And everything non-social media related.
Beautiful. Probably. This, I feel like we were a little bit rusty, but we got through it. And this is going to be a good year for us.
We were relatively civilized, I felt.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We stayed relatively on track as well, which is very unusual for us. Only a few tangents.
It's definitely a new year, isn't it?
Smells like 2019.
Yeah. I think we just need to work on the intro.
Excuse you, but yes, I mean, I do absolutely agree. But I would like, maybe the challenge is next time you have to sing the intro.
Okay, I'm going to go and research some 50s jazz.
Do it. Brilliant.
For inspiration.
Brilliant. Well, cool. Lovely to speak to you as always, and always lovely to kind of rant along. And I hope this is valuable to those of you listening. Reach out to us, and we will speak to you in the next one.
Indeed. Bye. See you soon. Bye.